Hey everyone, just a heads up, this bonus episode is about the movie Into the Blue 2. Over multiple occasions in this episode, Jared says Into the Deep 2, and I never correct him, so that's where we are. Into the Blue 2. Enjoy. So I'm just trying to fix it, you see. I just want our podcast to sound good.
You know what? We've made it sound too good. Can we go back to sounding bad? People's expectations are getting too high. I would like to lower them. Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only podcast that will do a Pearl Harbor 2.
Oh my God. Wait, hold on. I don't know if you can say that.
I'm your host, Jared Sheldon, and my co-host, Stephen Labine. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm about to get some somebody showing up at my apartment, condo, the police will be here.
Yeah, probably. So we just watched Into the Deep 2, Electric Boogaloo,
even
the
more
second
deep.
Pearl Harbor. You'll see why that's funny in a little bit. Stephen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just got back from vacation.
Today's the first time I've seen you in like 6 months.
It's been a week and a half.
It feels like so much longer than that. I missed you.
Aww.
I don't know what to do with myself when you're gone for that long. I think I might be codependent with you now.
You have so many things that you do, Jared.
I know, it's true.
Like an unbelievable amount of things.
I say that like I sat and stared at a wall and not like opened and closed a show and had rehearsals and went and saw a Cubs game in really nice seats because my work had tickets that they had to get rid of because the client had to cancel or whatever.
First thing you did when you saw me was gush about this game that you're playing. That's
okay.
Amazing.
Yes, I will be talking. I will become insufferable about this game for the next probably at least season, probably longer. So buckle in for that, y'all. Expedition 33 has immediately become my second favorite game of all time. I have binged it like I do not binge video games very often. And I'm through Act 1. And the end of Act 1 left my jaw on the floor. And I had to leave right when I got done with it to come here and record. So I'll be going back and doing that tonight, maybe, if we have time.
How many acts are there?
3.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like a third of the way through the game. Okay. And it's been like 6 days.
How Shakespearean?
Yes, correct. Well, no, Shakespeare would be 5 acts.
Is it? Well, fuck.
Yeah.
You can tell I don't act in Shakespeare shows.
Now, here's the thing. I'm doing a lot of talking, and we have so many emails to get to, I imagine.
A lot of emails.
And we have a movie to talk about. But,
yeah.
Stephen, you had your whole ass honeymoon.
My whole ass honeymoon?
Your whole ass honeymoon.
Yes.
any highlights you want to talk about from there or
honestly,
anything like that?
I had a blast. We spent so much time just wandering around, finding fun things and...
Where did you go, Stephen?
Went to London, went to Edinburgh. Yeah, we had a blast. We saw some shows. We got out to Dover. We did...
That's the Cliffs of Dover.
Yes, actually, we went to the Cliffs of Dover.
Nice.
And that is also the Eric Clapton song. Did you see my Instagram post?
I did, yes.
That's why.
I only know that song because of Guitar Hero 3.
Exactly.
But it's a great song.
It's a great song.
Kind of slaps.
It's fun. Anyway, had a great time. So when we went to Edinburgh, I expected haggis. What do you know of haggis?
It's sheep stomach.
Yes. It's sheep stomach. Well, kind of. It's sheep a lot of things.
Or sheep intestines.
Yeah, they chop it up and then they cook it in the
sure.
intestines. I expected it to be like the Malort of Scotland. Like it's the dumb thing that they make the tourists do.
Oh, I just thought, I mean, like pig belly is like good. So I figured haggis could actually probably be good too.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's like chopped up lung and heart and...
So is a hot dog, man. I don't know.
You're right. Anyway, case in point, it was delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a great time.
We just don't need to know where the meat comes from. You know?
I'd like to know where the meat
comes
from.
Steven, it's literally a phrase, like, how the sausage gets made.
Yeah.
Like, that you don't want to know how the sausage gets made.
I'd rather know. But no, I have a stronger stomach than most.
Fair. That's fair. Speaking of stronger stomachs... Into the Deep 2.
It's like, where are you going with this?
Emails.
Not emails.
I'm doing my best Steven cosplay. we'll do the mailbag at the end. So if you were done.
Doug, go ahead. I mean, I'll have more things that I will talk about. One, if you're going to a show in London right now, Starlight Express. That's the one to do.
Okay. Other things I'm sure will pop up through the course of the season.
Yeah.
Are you going to become that insufferable person that's like, when I studied abroad, you'd be like, on my trip to London.
When I paid a lot of money to go to a place. No.
That's what studying abroad is too, actually.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. At least you theoretically get something out of it.
That's
in
true.
The long run.
You got a lovely honeymoon.
I had a great time.
Most people just get like debt and a piece of paper. You got a spouse.
I got a spouse.
Well, I guess you had the spouse and you went.
That's
but you
true.
Kept them through it.
That is also true. I got whiskey. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to try that.
And a goblet.
A fire?
No.
We don't need to talk about the transphobe, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently she wrote all of her stuff in Edinburgh. The first book she wrote in Edinburgh.
Okay, well, good for her. Anyway.
So
Into the Deep 2, as I've mentioned a couple times, we watched this. It had Parvati and Amanda in it.
That's the link. That's why we're doing it.
Yes, that is the Survivor connection. Steven, before we get into our rundown of the movie, our review, if you will, general thoughts?
I expected this to be terrible.
Same.
Like, absolute horseshit movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than I expected. It's not an amazing movie, but it had a through line. It had twists.
Yeah.
It had a lot of unnecessary boobage.
Yes. Well, yes.
It wasn't untasteful, but it
only a couple of times. And honestly, I kind of expected there to be more. Like, just for like the caliber of movie we're walking into with it, like it being set in Hawaii, I was like, all right, we're going. We're probably leaning into the sex appeal of it all, which it did, but not as much as I was honestly expecting.
But like one or two times, that's pretty standard for an R-rated movie. You do it, I think we had like five or six times.
Yeah, and this was TVMA because it was a straight-to-DVD release.
I'm not entirely sure if that's true, but...
No, I looked it up.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is a sequel to, obviously, Into the Deep 1, which was a movie with, like... Who was it? Was it Jessica Alba.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, other famous Paul Walker and, like, other stars. And then literally zero actors came back for the second one. So I don't even know why they made it a sequel. It could have just been its own movie.
It's not about the stars. It's about... making money.
It's about Pearl Harbor 2. So, like, my headline at the top, I guess, would be, if this came on, like, when I was... Except for the boobage of it all, because I wouldn't want to be around my family when that happens.
Yeah,
but if it came, like, on TV when I was, like, at home for the holidays, I would have sat through it and been like, oh, that was pretty decent.
That was where my point was going, is that amount of boobage made it, like... lean into the softcore porn land.
Sure.
Where I'm like, okay, that's maybe too much.
Yeah, I agree too much and also still expected it to have more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was also kind of surprised at... So first of all, Parvati and Amanda play themselves. It's only in one scene. But
hilarious.
It's just weird because, like, Amanda's a normal name, but, like, Parv is, like, I've never known anybody else in pop culture media, like, as a fictional name that's named... Parvati. Like, for them to go by their real names is odd because I guess this is a world where Survivor doesn't exist because they're not stars in the movie.
No.
They're just girls.
I guess they never actually get to know them, so...
Yeah, but, like, come on. We'll get there. But they're just, like, normal people.
Yeah.
Well,
except Parv is a freak.
Well, okay, a normal freak.
Yeah.
You can't insult freaks, Steven. That's our entire listener base. Like,
okay, you can't say that.
Everyone who listens to this podcast is a freak. We have like 300 episodes and we're on season 18. If you've been listening all the way through, you are not neurotypical. I'm so sorry to have to tell you that. Anyway, I say that with love.
Jared.
Yeah, so immediately, right scene at the top, we have muscle men on some type of what we think is a drug deal, speaking Hawaiian with a weird translator who sounds Russian, and they say they dump the cargo, and this vaguely, like, not really Eastern European, but kind of Eastern European guy then shoots the guy who dumped the cargo because they weren't supposed to do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, I also wanted to say, this is unrelated to this is back to Gabon. I Ace's accent.
Oh, sure.
So I held auditions for a show this weekend, and somebody submitted a tape that they kept slipping in and out of British. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then I found out that actually is because she lived in America and lived in England for a while. And that is actually something that she does.
Their brain is confused.
What, something. So, like, I actually, maybe Ace's shit was real after seeing that. There I just go. Wanted to point that out.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. Kills the guy who dumped the drugs. And then we've already had the credits at the top of the film. But then we do more credits and this weird TV intro that made us go, is this actually a movie or is this like three episodes of something they stitched together to be an hour and a half long? Because it felt like a TV intro.
Yeah. It's like the, Kronk's New Groove, where they're like, oh, these were supposed to be three TV episodes. Let's just slash it together, make it a movie.
I did not know that. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And we get a ton of footage of underwater diving in this intro. It goes on for way too long, to the point that I was like, this just feels like how James Cameron wanted to make the Titanic movie, because he wanted to go dive at the Titanic, and that was really his only reason. I was like, these people just wanted to go diving in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, I get it. We meet our main cast, although only kind of, because there's like one brunette girl that's talking to the lead girl who you think's going to be important and then you never see again.
And then she never comes back.
Because we get a lot of exposition about her and then she just disappears. So that was odd. She was a terrible actor though, so I was fine with that. They call it a wet little slice of heaven. Phrasing. We looked up the main actor at this point. The main character's name is Sebastian. Who ends up like 10 years later doing a ton of Grey's Anatomy, like 125 episodes of Grey's Anatomy. So like, hey, good for him. He was an okay actor.
Yeah.
The acting of like the main cast was like fine for what it was.
Yeah, I can't complain about any of them.
Yeah. Some of the like smaller characters, it was like, ooh, they gave you one take, huh? And then it's like, oh, he's in a relationship with his boss, but no, it's like, okay, they run the company together and they have this like flirty sex thing in the beginning where they're like, she's like, oh, well, I think it's going to be an HR violation, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, is this role play or like, what is their relationship here?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, they just both run this company. It's like a 2-person company. Okay.
As it goes on, you're like, oh no, they're just a couple and that's their thing. But
in the beginning, it's like, what company are you talking about? I don't have any context for anything you're saying.
Is this actually a problem? Should we be concerned?
I didn't get the sense it was a problem, but I was just like, what is this dynamic? What is your background? Right from this point, we start getting transitions between scenes. And Steven, I've watched a lot of bad movies. You have watched less bad movies, but it's now getting up there because of me. I'm forcing you to.
It's you in the show. It's making me watch the bad things.
And I realize that I can tell when a movie's going to be bad. Like, if you just gave me transitions between scenes, I know when a movie is not going to be good. Now, what's weird is the transitions and the movie got better as it went. But in the beginning, they were transitioning between scenes. And what I mean is they would transition into nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be like, oh, we're talking, and then transition in. And it was like, there'd be like a minute or two of like dead air of kind of like nothing happening and no conversation happening. But anyway,
we talked that the amount of diving in this movie made for a lot of dead space because you physically cannot talk when you're underwater.
Yes.
Therefore, it's just going to be silent.
Long extended scenes of people just diving in like Honolulu Reef.
Yeah. And
it's pretty.
It didn't seem out of place. It didn't seem like they were making a bad choice. It's just, it's quiet.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about that.
We then get our first boobs watch as the comic relief friend, whose character name is Mace. Fucking Mace. What the hell? Sneaks into the room to pretend he had like been sleeping there, because I guess, as we learn, he was at the club the night before and some crazy girl named Parvati, which again, if it was just like a normal person's name, like if they would just given her a character name, it wouldn't have been so jarring.
No.
But it's weird to hear that like, oh, this random girl named Parvati licked his chest because he spilled a drink on himself. But that's probably not what happened at all.
Even if they would have gone with Amanda doing it, it would have been less jarring.
Yes, correct. And that's just a little like teaser of like, oh, okay, we'll get the survivor characters later. It felt like it did feel like a little bit of like, you came for the survivor character, didn't you? Well, hold on to that thought.
We're feeling seen.
Yep. Then we get the British man, the evil British man that will be our antagonist to the film.
He's not evil yet.
Well, okay, yeah, but he's British. Yes, he is. He oozes evil right away. Shows up and is like, hey, we're going to go diving looking for this like ancient Spanish vessel from the 1600s that was supposed to be going to the Philippines that our main character is like obsessed with. That is not what we're actually looking for. But that's what he tells them in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then we get many, many more scenes of diving, of them looking for this boat, supposedly.
The San Cristobal.
Yes, that's what it was. Thank you. They find a piece of it, actually. Well, they end up, they don't know it's a piece of it yet. They get it from the seafloor. They're going to have to go, like, let it sit in acid for a while. But it ends up being a piece of it. And he tells them a lot about how he wants to get his someday boat. With the evil British guy and his... And this girl that he's with named Avra, which we'll get more about their relationship later.
Azra,
thank you. Invite them back to his house for probably an orgy, but not actually. It did feel like, we really like your vibe, taking us on this diving tour for the week. So want to come back to our place for drinks?
Our very big, strong chef. Yes. With a ponytail will make you dinner.
Our large chef.
Who doesn't speak English, not because he can't, because he chooses not to.
Yes.
Which is a funny plot line.
Well, yeah. Which we'll get there as to why. Everyone else drinks, and Azra has water, but they think it's vodka, and he's like, oh no, Azra doesn't drink. It's a control thing. Hey, buddy, that sounds ominous as hell when you put it that way.
Never explained. Do you understand that?
I think it means like so she can stay in control.
Because if she gets drunk, she may just go kill people.
Well, or if something happens, she's not drunk. Like if she needs to go handle some business, she's not intoxicated.
Okay.
And by business, I mean murder. Because this woman is insane, as we'll learn later.
Cold-blooded killing machine.
I just wrote down a quote here. The wine is amazing. It's like drinking velvet. That sounds horrible, actually. Drinking velvet sounds terrible.
It's very chewy. Chewy velvet.
Yes. And then we talk about wine. Night diving and how, no, you should only dive in the day because it's dangerous at night. And Sebastian says he actually likes, their main character, he actually likes diving at night because there's nothing wrong with fear. He has a fear boner. And then we go to more diving. And this time they find an Uzi.
Well, no. They have very, very explicitly say that the girl, the main girl, Danny... does not night dive.
Thank you. She does not night dive. That is important later.
Yes, she will not do it. No night dives.
It's the next day. We're diving again. They find an Uzi. The British guy is like not even hiding at all. He's like, oh, hell yeah. And they're like, what? No, we don't like guns on the boat. And so Azra throws the Uzi back in the water. I don't know if that's what you're supposed to do with it either, but all right. And then we kind of jump cut right away to a... kind of, now that the whole movie is done, completely out of place volleyball
scene.
It's
very out of place. It's just to establish the douchebag other diver.
Nemesis? Yeah.
Who, yeah, is their friend in the end. And or, like, does them a solid.
Yeah. And so, like, the girlfriend, the comic relief girlfriend and the main girlfriend play volleyball against Parv and Amanda because they recognize her as the... I think they called her a bimbo that, or something along those lines, that was all over her man, whatever. We'll beat them in volleyball. They hustle her surfboard from her, which is like a bet of like, if we beat you, I get your surfboard. If you beat us, you get free lessons with my boyfriend, which is like not an equal monetary value.
No,
probably not the point, but still.
Also, this was the point in the movie where I'm like, there are no women in this that are like more than 100 pounds.
Yeah. You know, yes.
Every single woman on screen was tiny.
They casted one type.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Azra, like, is a badass, but like they casted models. Amanda, not a great actress. Parv does okay, actually.
Yeah, I was impressed.
The actual like action cuts of the volleyball scene, because it's not just like one game that they show. They're showing the girls' game and the guys' game at the same time and putting both of them on screen at the same time. and the cuts are jarring. And like, if someone had epilepsy watching this, that would be a problem.
This is my biggest problem with this movie.
I felt nauseous watching it.
The jumps and the cuts are so jarring. And especially in action scenes or
yes.
scenes where there is not a Steadicam, it is so jumpy.
It's very 2000s action movie, but done poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is also crazy just to see all these three, Amanda Parv and then our comic relief girlfriend, all like beefing over this sleazy dude, like this kind of rat looking sleazy dude. It's like, okay, that was someone in the writer's room, like self insert. Like, I want these cool girls arguing over me, I guess.
It is funny now that I think about it. Had Kimmy like lost or given up the sleazy dude to Parv, she would have lived.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Oops.
Let your sleazy guy go or else you might get shot
by a terrorist.
And then we learned the guys playing against some rival divers. The rival dude that's like the, like, I almost like I call him like comic antagonist. Like, he's the rival diver, but he's not like actually a villain. He's just kind of a dick.
He's just kind of a douchebag.
His relationship with his girlfriend is weird. And we get like a little bit of it here, and then they don't ever extrapolate on it ever again, which is bizarre. Except for actually the next scene where we're at the club, and it's once again a lot of jump cuts of a club. I will give them credit. We have seen bad movies where people go to like clubs or bars, and it's like there's seven people here. They got a good sized club. It looks like a club.
They paid money for their extras.
They sure did. Seizure material, but they got it. And they actually do like a wet t-shirt contest. Like, usually you hear that in a thing and it's like they don't go show it. No, they show a girl with a wet t-shirt grinding on the antagonist diver.
Add it to the boobs list.
And then his girlfriend like yells at him about it, and she's also a terrible actor, and then we never see her again.
Well,
we see him like dry humping her on their boat, but she never has.
No,
like,
it was a new girl.
Was it?
Yeah, because she very clearly had like dark black hair.
Oh yeah.
And the girl on the boat was blonde.
Oh yeah.
She's just gone.
They just never.
She throws a drink in his face and is like, oh, I'm done with you.
And that's the kind of thing where I'd be like, oh, this must be a carryover from like Into the Deep One.
No.
But it's not. That's weird. I didn't even think about that at the time. It's just, that's a weird plot thread that goes nowhere. Okay, now we have like the cross of satin acid. We show the bad guys like, hey, it's part of the ship we're going to search for. And the bad guys tell them, okay, we're not actually looking for that ship. We are looking for Saddam Hussein's gold. That we're smugglers. We are smuggling it over. And they'll pay $500,000 because if they don't find it this week, they're all going to die because the people that they owe the money to, or that they owe the gold to, will come and hunt them down. They know who these people are now. All of this is bullshit. But something this movie does weirdly well is like, that's a good story.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the things that happen from here on out in the movie actually make logical sense most of the time. And it's like, it doesn't, like, in an action movie, you're always like, oh, like, this thing, like, there's tropes, or like, this thing is going to happen. And it, like, the more, it is kind of like cuckoo bananas, the actions that happen, but like, it still feels more realistic than most action movies.
Yeah, like, nothing that they did felt unrealistic.
Like, these villains feel sloppy in a way that feels like, oh yeah, okay, this is probably how these villains would feel. Now, we'll get to it, but they actually are like a terrorist organization, but there's like three of them. That part's a little out there, but still.
Actually, I take it back. There was one scene that I'm like, this is very unrealistic.
Yes, fair. There's still some of that, but we'll get more into it when we get into as the plot starts to unravel. Trying to rush through it still.
Of course.
A cop comes to investigate, like, what's going on? Like, why are you guys diving? And they have a rapport. Again, I thought it'd be something from the previous movie, but I guess not at all. We get enough information to know what's going on, that he has a friend that's a cop that will become important later.
The douchebag uses SOS for a joke.
Like, yeah.
While they're out diving and, like, getting ready to dive, he's putting SOS on the radio. And I'm like, that feels like a crime.
Probably.
definitely abusing that sort of system.
Which he does get chided for by the main guy. And our evil man is like, hey, you know, this guy can't know that we're looking for the stuff. He needs to go away. And he's like, well, the best way is to ignore him and he'll go away on his own. And it's actually like a good conversation where it's like, oh, yeah, that's a like the villain's being a little sloppy. The right the hero has the right idea, but, you know, they don't know they're at odds or whatever right now. But the whole time, and it's actually very funny, the antagonist diver has is doing this crazy, probably improvised monologue about putting Icy Hot on his balls.
Yeah.
And how good it feels.
He's both over the radio saying it and shouting it at him.
It's actually really funny.
It's pretty good. And also, if you're on boob watch, there's more boobs because the girl who's on the boat also topless.
That's true. Yes. Yep. And then if you're on dive watch, we have more diving where they find the first crate, but there's two crates. And I was like, well, if there's a lot of gold and shit, it should be more than two crates, which I thought was a plot hole. Actually, not at all.
Not a plot hole.
Which we'll get into. And then
Maybe I should have been keeping tally. What happens more in this movie, diving or boobs?
Diving, easily.
Diving, yes.
Mace, the comic relief guy, was flirting with Parv over texts, because we don't ever see Parv or Amanda again. They have a beach volleyball scene, and then that is it.
They were brought in for a single day shoot. We're not doing this more than once.
Correct. And they have Mace and his girlfriend have this weird fight, or not even weird, like this, they have a toxic relationship, right? Like it's very clearly like, all, like they fight all the time, they get back together. So they fight and then they get back together. I don't really know why this scene was in here at all, especially because she's going to die. Spoiler alert. And after that fight, then Sebastian talks with Mace on the beach about how, and Mace is like, I'm not going back to her. And then we jump cut to them fucking, like explicitly. It's not, like, completely pornographic, but we get boob watch again, I'm pretty sure.
Boob watch.
And then, so the two couples go to the evil guy's house for dinner, and they have this weird conversation about, like, do they believe in God or not? But it is, like kind of normal. I feel like I'm being harsher on this, I sound harsher on this movie than I actually mean to, because it is a weird conversation, but it's weird, like, in its own universe. It's not weird where I was sitting there going, what?
It's the one time I felt the script was trying too hard to point in a certain direction.
Yeah, that's fair.
The guy's like, this lobster almost made me believe in God.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's like, wait, you don't believe in God? And I'm like, okay, well, hold on. Now,
directed by Timothy Shea. Now, main girl does not want to be involve these people anymore. She calls him sleazy, and Sebastian goes, the exact conversation is, he's sleazy, he's European.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. So they go diving alone at night.
That's the thing that they said they can't do.
Yes, but it's for good reason,
Danny,
I suppose.
Danny won't do it.
Yeah, but Sebastian will, and Danny will wait on the boat. Although I think she goes in there.
She definitely goes with him.
Yeah.
She makes a whole thing of it. She's like, I won't let you go down there alone.
Yeah, and at this, I feel like the back half of this movie is better than the front half, because I wrote down here, we're halfway through and I feel like nothing has happened, and also we've been watching forever. We come back up and, oh no, the evil three people, or the evil people are on the boat.
What did they find in the box?
Oh, yes.
Very important.
We find the casing of a nuclear warhead. Not the payload, but the casing. And then we get back up and, yeah, this is not a big boat. It's like a fishing vessel that they went out on this with. And the large cook, the British man, and Azra were hiding on the boat, I guess?
So I did say this. I think they had a separate little
speedboat, like, maybe?
One of those, kind of like what you would see in Survivor sometimes, where it's like it looks like an inflatable raft, but it has a motor on it.
Where they didn't notice they were following them?
That doesn't make any sense to me, but all right.
Yeah, anyway. Oh, they do, it does seem like, I don't know a lot about diving, because I famously hate the ocean, but it does seem like it was pretty well researched. Like, they put on the crate, they put these balloons, and then use their snorkel to, like, fill them up with air to help, like level the crate off, which is, I don't know, kind of cool. Yeah, and then we get the main guy saying that they want to do a Pearl Harbor Part 2, and that is verbatim.
That, yeah, he did say that. Not the main character, the evil guy.
Oh, Azra.
Yeah.
Or yeah, the evil guy says that. Azra then goes on a monologue about like how like American imperialism is bad. And you're supposed, I think you're supposed to assume that she's from the Middle East because she talks about like bombs falling and like, oh, it hits the wrong house and you're not dead, but you wish you were. And I was like, I mean, I'm right there with you, girl. But the whole time it's happening, the hero's girlfriend has jumped into the water. And so she's giving this whole monologue about how American imperialism is bad. While you just hear an Uzi going off randomly because he's trying to shoot the girl under the water the entire time.
Yeah. Well, while she has a gun to Sebastian's head.
Yes. We just turn down the Uzi sound. It really undercut. Like the monologue was pretty good, actually.
I didn't mind it, actually. I thought it was kind of fun.
I think it was the duration. It was very silly how long he's just firing and not reloading and just the entire time. But I'm nitpicking. The boat pulls away because they're like, oh, she's gone. She's probably, or she could be dead, but she swam away or whatever. She uses the air in the balloons underwater to like keep herself down there. And then swims back to Hawaii, almost dies of hypothermia. Somebody ends up rescuing her later in the movie. They kidnap Mason, his girlfriend. He must be a heavy sleeper because they had her like, they had a knife to her throat before they woke him up. All of them are hogtied on the boat, and our hero sends the SOS signal with his feet.
Impressive.
His foot watch.
Do you think he has a wiki on feet? Wiki feet?
Probably. I mean, he was in Grey's Anatomy for a long time, so it's not like he's an unknown. Like, it's not like this is his one credit on IMDb, you know?
I've never been to WikiFeet, but...
Me either.
Do I want to spoil that for this? I don't even know the guy's name. It's not worth it.
Oh, we can look it up.
Well, you're right.
And then they hear over the radio that the girlfriend was rescued. She's in the hospital. And Azra takes the main guy back to the hospital to be there in case she's awake or whatever. And like, this is where their plan starts to fall apart. But like, I kind of like that a villain, like their plan doesn't go perfectly. Cause in a lot of action movies, it's like, oh, the heroes did this thing. And it's like somebody comes to the rescue or Deus Ex Machina, or like they're foiled at the last second. It's like, oh no, they were just a little messy and they have to like, they have to go to the hospital and deal with it rather than, and like, it's kind of lazy and messy how they deal with it. Like Azra's there and they talk to the cop and the Sebastian makes up a bad story for the cop, but like it's the best story he could make up of like, hey, why was your girlfriend found on a buoy like almost dead last night?
I don't know, we got in a fight and she stormed out and that was the last I saw of her. She must have went out for like a night dive.
Yeah, and slips in the name of the asshole other diver's boat to like tip off the cop. Is clever.
What was that boat's name?
I don't remember.
It was something, something douchey.
Like, his lie's bad, but it's like the best story you could possibly come up with. There was a very 2009 moment, which is the nurse telling Azra that she can't use her cell phone in the room. She has to go out in the hall, which is like, oh yeah, right. Back when we were like, the cell phones will interfere with the medical equipment. Azra says, I'm going to stay here with your girlfriend in case she wakes up so I can make sure she doesn't talk. You have to go back to the boat. And if you're, it's 5 minutes away. If you're not there in three, I'm going to kill her. So he sprints through Honolulu. They get on the boat. They find the second container. And the comic relief guy is going with our main hero to go bring it back up. Right. And he's like, well, what do you do? He's like, I don't have some good monologue for you, whatever. He's like, well, what do we do then? Do what you do best. Fuck it up. And this is kind of like a little bit of of what I did like about this movie. Like, they do that, and then it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah. You think that this is a brilliant plan. They're just gonna, like, oh, dink around, and, I don't know, maybe we break the container, and it doesn't work or something.
Yeah, so, like, in a high-budget action movie, like, what would happen is, like, oh, they, you know, because the large chef is down there with a harpoon gun to make sure they don't fuck it up. They'd, like, release the ballast. It would, like, it would get tangled in the guy's harpoon gun. They'd fight him. They'd take the gun.
No, not the large chef. The evil British guy, because the large chef...
Oh,
because
he can't swim.
Correct.
But it would go like that. In this, he fucks it up on purpose. The balloon goes up. They go up to the surface. He's like, hey, sorry, I didn't know. I fucked it. I didn't mean to do it. Or, like, that would give enough time for, like, cops to arrive or something.
Yeah.
Instead, in this, they, like, threaten him with a gun and then kill his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what would happen.
Yeah,
and
you're not going to fuck this up again.
Yeah. I will say the harpoon gun underwater, good choice. I like that. Yeah. That was fun.
Of course, it doesn't get used underwater.
It does not.
It gets used solely above water.
Which Sebastian's advice did directly get his girl that did get Mace's girlfriend killed, and then we never deal with that.
No,
that's fine.
There's no real repercussions. We
even get a flash forward, and they're just like cool.
Yeah, I mean, we have a funeral, a weird.
Well,
surf,
that's what you want to call it.
Surfboard funeral.
The hero's girlfriend wakes up from her coma and immediately sprints out of the hospital.
This is the one where I'm like, no.
That one's probably not happening.
You're not getting out of a coma and
a hypothermia-induced coma and immediately be in good enough health to sprint through Honolulu.
Away from a train killer.
Yeah, right? But oh well. And like again, like a lesser action movie, I feel like they would have gone back underwater and they would have had some type of ridiculous plan. In this case, they just like, oh, they're going to make us go back and try it again? Fuck it, I guess we're going to fight.
Yeah, if we're going to fight for our lives, let's do it now.
Let's just do it right now. So they fight the Mace, the comic relief guy, fights the chef in the water. Our hero fights the British guy. He offers him money because he gets the upper hand. He has the harpoon gun. And he says, you're not a murderer. He goes, no, you are. And then she fucking shoots him through the chest.
With the harpoon gun.
With the harpoon gun. Which is like Batman's philosophy of like, well, if there's 100 murderers and you kill one, there's still 100 murderers. Not if you kill 99, then there's only one and it's you. Like, it feels like it's that personified.
Sure.
It's like, all right, yeah, I guess I'll just take you out. And like, whatever. Goon drowns.
I can't swim.
Just so good. The guy we saw at the very beginning who killed the Hawaiian goons for dumping the crates in the first place is killed by Azra because she has to go back in hiding, possibly setting up for an Into the Deep 3 that obviously never happens.
Ah, come on.
And then we have this weird surf circle memorial for the girlfriend who died.
Yeah.
That was frankly painful to watch.
I was trying to figure out if this was, I don't know, something rooted in Polynesian culture, but all the white people are doing it. It just felt weird.
That's because it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then we jump 6 months forward. They have found the ship. They bought their someday boat. They're friends with Mace, who's on the boat drinking beer, and says, things are looking up. And I'm like, dude, the guy you are on that boat with got your girlfriend killed 6 months ago, but all right then.
Yeah, but he didn't really like her anyway, so clearly it didn't matter to him. And how much money did they get from that cut that is only told to us in subtitles at the end?
$750 million.
And what do they do immediately
they
with
opened
that?
A surf shop.
Are you kidding me, my dude?
You don't have to work.
$750 million is an amount that I cannot even fathom.
No.
To go from, oh, we're struggling to get by, I can't buy my own boat, to I have $750 million.
Which I guess on the surf shop comment, sure, they don't have to work. But also, like, if I had $750 million, I would probably open my own theater.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's his passion and, like, what, like, I guess that's not that crazy.
Okay.
But, you know, and you could just, like, when you don't want to be working, you'd be like, I'm not going to do it right now. I don't have to fucking pay these. I'll pay the bills. I don't have to. This isn't paying my bills. It's just for fun for me.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was okay. The end of it, like, it was pretty fun. That was a rundown of the plot. Steven, would you recommend people watch this?
If you're bored, you want something to do, especially if you're like, I want to see Parv and Amanda act in a scene, you can watch the first half hour of this movie if you want. It's free on Pluto TV right now. That's what we watched it on. It does make the movie go longer because it stops every 15 minutes to watch an ad.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
The ads weren't that long, though, I will say.
There were more of them than I would have liked.
This is, like I said earlier, it's the type of movie that, like, if it came on TV when I was home for the holidays, or if it was on a plane, or, you know, something like that, I'd be like, oh, that was perfectly fine. But okay. If I sought it out and made a special night of it, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Whatever. Steven, what do you think it's rated on Rotten Tomatoes?
I think it's gonna be, I think it's bad, but I think it's not bad bad. So I'm gonna go a critic score of 49, an audience score of, I think there's gonna be a jump here. 67.
I'm so sorry to break your heart. I think this movie is rated unfairly. 17 critic score.
Okay.
18 audience score.
Okay.
I think it's better than that, to be honest.
I think it's better than that. I don't think it's good, but I think it's better than that.
I think it's like in the 60s. Because remember, like a 70 is mid.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's like in the 50s to 60s. I went through our other movies that we've watched that have either Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb scores, because I don't remember if we've done this. And if we have already, oh well, it'll be fun again. Steven, what do you think Gone is rated on IMDb?
Awful. I think it's a critic score of 2. An audience...
IMDb is just... It's just people.
Just people?
Yeah, it's just audience score.
Oh, okay. Then it will be higher because the Christians are the ones who are watching this. So I'll go...
it's out of 10.
Okay. Conglomerate score of 3.
7.2.
Shit. Shit.
Yeah. Steve, I'm going to read you a couple of reviews for my own entertainment. And then I know we need to get to emails. This one, a 9 out of 10 on March 9th, 2012. Again, 9 years after this movie came out. This movie succeeds on a basic level. It's entertaining. Sure, the story is loose and religious, and the film's surprises are somewhat stale, but it's all in good fun. There's just enough suspense to sustain interest, and the minor twists of the story keep things at a good pace. Meanwhile, the rounded supporting cast of all TV shows Survivor keeps things lively and keeps the viewer going, where have I seen him before? Or, hey, that's such and such. Good casting call. I've read on here how people think this is stupid, dumb, and lacks any suspense or thrills. Like any of the faith-based movies had exceptionally smart stories. You didn't know what was going to happen next or how it would end. Of course not. For an entry-level religious flick, this one satisfies. Now, if only I could get the last song out of my mind. There's a bunch like that. It's kind of crazy.
Yikes. I wonder how many of those were paid for by the director.
There's 1,600 reviews, though.
My God.
I know. This must have been popular in Christian circles at the time. What do you think Honorable Men is rated on IMDb? I'll tell you, they have 166 reviews, so significantly less.
2.
1.6.
There it is. One that lives up to expectations.
Yeah. And what about The Mercenary? This does have an audience score on IMDb, or on Rotten Tomatoes, and an IMDb score with 796 reviews.
Sure. I think it'll be a... 5.5.
Damn, good. 5.2.
Nice.
Yeah, 45% audience on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right.
Yeah. So, Steven, your rankings of the bonus episodes.
I've already put it down. I know exactly where this is going because there's a power gap in my rankings now. Currently, as it stands, BattleBots, Game Changer, Top Shot, MetaQuest, The Mercenary, Total Drama, Endurance, Seeking Mr. X, The Infernal Room, Rumble in the Jungle, Gone, Castaway Island, and Honorable Men. I put it right after Top Shot.
So the ones above it are BattleBots, Game Changer, Top Shot, and that's it?
That's it.
Wow.
Technically, I think Total Drama should be higher, but the one episode that we watched doesn't really sell it.
That's fair.
So...
You can move it if you want to.
I could.
Because you've seen more of the show than I have.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna.
Okay. Yeah, that's that really says a lot that it's of, you know, whatever, however many that is, like 12 or 13 or whatever, because we've skipped some bonus content to interview people and stuff like that. It's in our top 4, and it's rated 16% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I had a decent time with it.
I did too.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So, Jared... We have a lot of emails.
Yeah, all right.
A lot of emails.
I'm strapped in.
Get yourself ready, because, boy, we have a lot to go through. And chime in when you feel the need, because I'm just going to cruise through this. Starting with our messages. Oh, and I want to apologize in advance that I would have liked to filter through some of these, but I was on vacation, so I didn't get the chance. So we're doing it. You're getting... all of these raw, starting with a message that I got.
Just raw dog and emails.
Yeah, I got on Reddit. Remember, you can message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT, from Hunter of the Rain.
Oh, hello, Hunter of the Rain.
Says, I would rather fight a chimpanzee than a gorilla, but I would rather be within 50 meters of a gorilla than a chimpanzee.
I think that's a good way to put it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
P.S. listed below.
I was really hoping that was the old, that was it. That was the end of the message from a completely new listener.
P.S. listed below are other things I'd rather be within 50 meters of than a chimpanzee. Hippopotamus. Elephant. Yep. Mm-hmm. Elephant's foot. Swarm of angry bees stole their honey. Swarm of angry beekeepers stole their honey, etc.
Elephant, those are, that's good. That's a good bit.
Let me just put it this way. We're not having conversations on TikTok about can 100 men take a chimpanzee?
Fair. Because so, they can't.
Because they can't. They would easily beat the chimpanzee.
Yes, but the ones that you would lose some people. Some people would be brutally murdered.
Also, on this topic from Bro My God, I have an opinion regarding gorilla versus chimpanzee. First of all, you've probably heard the 100 men versus one gorilla trend going around. I instead want to refer you to two things. One, the reboot of, this is Plants of the Apes, but it's Planet of the Apes, a series starting with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Those are chimpanzees, and they are terrifying, especially in Dawn and War. I haven't seen any of those movies.
I haven't either.
But I'll take your word for it. Two, Travis the Chimpanzee. I implore you to read the first paragraph of this Wikipedia entry. All right, I did, and I wrote back to him, oh my God. So here we go. The opening phrase from this Wikipedia article about Travis the Chimpanzee. Travis, October 21st, 1995 through February 16th, 2009, was a male chimpanzee who was raised by and lived with Sandra Harold in Stamford, Connecticut. On February 16th, 2009, he attacked and mauled Harold's friend, Charla Nash, blinding her, severing several body parts, and lacerating her face before he was shot and killed by responding officer Frank Chafari.
Oh my God.
The incident received widespread international attention and sparked a debate over the ethics of keeping primates as pets. Yeah. Oof.
Curious George, curious about murder.
Just like ripping off limbs and stuff.
Yeah. Ooh. No thank you.
No thank you. Ouchies. My God. The 911 call is available online if you do have interest in listening to it.
I'm good.
Don't know why anyone would. Oh, man.
Why is it online?
Couldn't tell you. However, Suicide Silence used the entire call in one of their tracks, and I used to listen to them in high school, so I got to listen to that call without knowing what I was getting into.
How long is the call for that to be into an entire track?
No idea.
Yeah, I don't want to know, actually. I asked the question. I don't want the answer.
Mm. And then on 5-5, message one more time, with the release of the Gabon finale, we are at 250 episodes.
Hey, look at that.
Bam.
We did it, Steven.
Congrats. Thank you. Excluding Patreon episodes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So in total, we're more than 250 episodes. Way to go, us. Okay, jumping into our emails. And boy, do we have some. From Josh. Josh says, Corinne actually reminds me of a meaner version of Katie from Survivor Palau. I do think if the second swap had never happened, Marcus probably wins as the Tom-like figure, and Corinne gets to the end while getting 0-1 votes to win like Katie.
Yeah, I could see that.
Normally, once all the jurors meet up in Ponderosa, there's usually some sense of community and forgiveness. However, Crystal is the first of a couple of people in Survivor history to get ignored by the rest of the jury that was there when she first arrived. Marcus, Charlie, Randy, and Corinne pretty much don't talk to her at first. Eventually, as other jurors come in, the tension wears down and they begin to interact.
Ugh. Gross.
Yeah, that's not fun. Don't like that.
Especially because, I'm surprised by Marcus, too. Because, I mean, I guess she voted him out, but, they had that connection of, the cousin and everything. And it's like, it's a game, dude.
Yeah.
You got.
You done got. Carl's episode 9 email, picture the episode, a loser. Sugar giving the big ol' L to Randy. Notes, I don't know that I get the impression that Fong gets an underdog edit, actually. They should, considering the circumstances, but they never feel like they're portrayed as plucky underdogs, more like pathetic idiot sad sacks who do things like let Kelly survive 3 tribal councils. Then, all of a sudden, Jeff's attitude and the recaps flip, and Kenny and Crystal are suddenly dominating the game strategically. It's all very strange.
Huh, okay. I think I just disagree, at least on Kenny and Crystal. I feel like, yes, a lot, Fong as a tribe does not get a a underdog edit, but I feel like Crystal, Kenny, and Sugar kind of do.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't shown, but Sugar allegedly didn't just laugh at Randy. She literally started rolling around on the floor, howling with laughter like a child being tickled.
Oh.
Well, that kind of escalated a little bit.
Yeah.
Eh. Oh, well. Randy ended up giving his 6 free seats at the finale reunion to 6 random fans.
That's cool.
Who were lined up outside the theater trying to get tickets. That's even cooler. Saying his friends and family wouldn't be interested. Other emailers have already written you saying that Randy has always come off as pleasant, appreciative, and engaging with fans, and his beefs with Crystal and Sugar have been buried. And of course, in the main episode, at least, we didn't get his more humanizing and emotional confessionals about his relationship with his dog, Johnson, who had been with him in every audition tape for 15 years.
Oh.
Or his friendship with Maddie that he saw extending beyond the game, or the scenes where he would be Dan's emotional confidant when Dan came to him about his anxiety. Because when the crusty old villain who's made enemies by calling people names like Sasquatch gets humiliated with a fake idol by Sugar and Co., you're going to edit the season in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I'd do the same thing if I was a Gabon editor.
Well, that's the story, right? Like, you're not going to get every dynamic of everybody's personality in one season.
Right. I know I said in a previous email that most people hated Randy, but I think I might have exaggerated it a bit. He certainly wasn't popular per se, but at the same time, a lot of people did appreciate what he brought to the season.
Mm.
He has a certain curmudgeonly charm to him that someone like, I don't know, Corinne completely lacks.
Well, as Randy said, you're either born with the ability to love him or you're not.
Randy also has a somewhat distinct social media presence among Survivor alums in that he doesn't kiss the ass of Jeff in production in the hopes of getting brought back.
Hmm.
Many former Survivor players will do things like retweet Jeff on CBS with things like, "What a moment," or "Wow, Survivor does it again."
Okay.
This wasn't a trend during Randy's time, but starts happening, I'd say, around the mid to late 20s.
That makes sense because, you know, the internet.
Randy, on the other hand, will retweet Jeff and say, "Fuck you, Probst, you've ruined the franchise." Which I agree with, and even if I didn't, I appreciate his candor.
Whew. Okay.
All that to say, I very much enjoy Randy in Gabon. He's a total unique character in the Survivor pantheon and the perfect Survivor villain, someone who's a total dick to the people around him he doesn't like, thereby causing plentiful drama, but doesn't seem to actually be a rotten person at his core.
Yes.
Or at the very least, isn't a sex villain.
Well, yeah, that helps.
It's a little bar.
But... And when he's called out, like, it fixes it. Yeah. So, yeah.
A person cut from Randy's cloth almost definitely wouldn't make the show nowadays, or at the very least wouldn't receive this edit. And I think that's a shame. Brief things I liked. Maddie's turkey gobble during the challenge. It's easy to miss, but he literally gobbles like a turkey. And that's hands down for a slap, which I need to start saying regularly.
It's a good phrase.
That's hands down for a slap. Nice. Also, from this one from Connor, Connor's episode 12 email. Oh, Kenny and the Bob immunity necklace drama. It's frustrating to see Kenny lose some favor over something so trivial. It's insane how much control Sugar has, but she's still the star of Gabon, whether people like Corinne like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is she playing the best game to win? No. But she is an all-star. I think Sugar moving to Bob has to do with her dad passing.
Yeah.
She's smart and she sees the writing on the wall with the Onion Alliance being a solid 3, with Randy being a potential 4th lock. So she is trying to make the best of it. I do think it would have been better to go after Kenny at 6 and keep Crystal, since if Sugar went with an all-female final 3, the votes may have been scattered and she would have a better chance of winning.
Hmm.
As much as I love Bob, do you guys think he's catching some lucky breaks so far? I mean...
We kind of talk about it in the finale.
Yeah.
Since he's the winner.
Yes, his challenge wins are amazing, and it makes me happier to see that the cast of 50 may hold up as well due to age. He just is making some close calls and some jury management issues with the Fongs and Randy. However, with how everyone is after each other... how they're after each other this season, I think it doesn't matter as much. Thoughts on the game as well as Sugar's. Apparently, Crystal... Oh, I'll stop there. Thoughts on the game as Sugar and Bob's game?
Yeah, I think we talked most about that in the finale, to be honest. There isn't too much else to go over that we didn't talk about there, except for, you know, sometimes the best move is to do nothing.
Yeah.
And Bob did that to some extent.
Apparently, Crystal was going to vote out Kenny at 5 or 4, so I think Sugar made a mistake here.
Hmm.
I mean, how would you know? Also, a Corinne story, she was Ethan Zone's ex, and Ethan and Jenna Maresca started dating. She was at a bar and punched Jenna in the face.
Of course she did.
That sounds about right. Another one from Josh. Josh says, considering Survivor will have multiple people on in the future who have served time for drug-related crimes before they went on the show, I don't think Crystal's steroid usage had any effect on why she was never brought back. As much as Jared may hate to hear this, I think the producers just like Corinne more.
I do hate to hear that. That's true.
I do think it's worth remembering that the original Fong Alliance was Randy, Dan, Susie, and Maddie versus Crystal, Kenny, and CG. GC.
Oh,
my,
yeah.
My brain didn't work there. Maddie and Crystal have never been allies to this point, where he tried to vote her out in the ace vote. They were only really aligned out of necessity.
Sure.
On the flip side, Maddie and Susie have been very closely aligned for most of the game.
Yeah.
But we never see that because that's not the story they wanted to tell.
It becomes important later, and we get, like, you have to, like, we talk about it where it's like, oh, I guess Maddie and Susie were close, and, like, we get little snippets of it, but, like, really late in the season, it's kind of weird.
Someone wrote this in about Fair Play, but the Celebrity Survivor Captain thing you read about Crystal was a fan-produced Survivor season with 3 Survivor players acting as the team captains, with Fair Play and Crystal being 2 of them. So if you want to watch Crystal play another season, you can check that out.
Hmm, okay.
Fun. From Carl. Carl's episode 10 and 11 email. Picture the episode. Oh, it's Bob looking rough.
Yeah, yeah, he looks really bad by the end of the season.
Defeat the cryptid to claim your loot. Notes. That really got you.
Yeah, that did. I love that.
Notes. The favorites, with in quotation marks, on Fans vs. Favorites 2 are really just names you'll recognize. Corinne was far and away the least popular person from her season, maybe from the entire teens. I'd actually forgotten how absent she is from the whole season. Though, then again, we haven't gotten to her big moment yet. Which,
yeah, even with that big moment, like, that should make her less qualified to be on a future season, not more.
She was maybe even more of a hideous witch at Ponderosa. She attempts to band everyone together to give Crystal the silent treatment and just spends pretty much all her time continuing to talk shit about people in her desperate camera time seeking way.
Ugh.
And that's not a bad faith descriptor. She literally got mad in some post-show interview about how she said she was way meaner. She said way more meaner things than were shown. And
it's the reunion.
She should have got more airtime.
Yeah, the reunion, she said that.
Mario Lanza of the Historians podcast mentioned also tells a story about coming with Randy to an event in LA and meeting Corinne, who apparently gives him a brief 2-second look over, determined he wasn't famous, and proceeded to not look at him again while she talked to Randy. I mean, doesn't she just sound like the best?
Oh, God. I've literally not heard a redeeming thing about her.
Corinne's well known for all that, being a horrible ghoul, but perhaps even more so for her after-show activities. She does pre-premiere cast assessments with Rob Has a Podcast for a long time and had a more recent Survivor podcast with a contestant from season 30, which, to be fair, I've heard was pretty funny. She had more people come around on her due to, I think, mainly to these things, and also just people appreciating Gabon as time goes on.
Sure.
I, for one, still think she sucks balls.
Yep.
I know it's Rob and Amber season, but Amazing Race 7 is generally considered to be one of the worst seasons ever. So have fun.
Hilarious.
Great.
Which, yeah, that will come out. We have to. It's going to be. It's already late. It's going to be later.
We're going to get it when we can. Great Jared rant on this episode got me thinking. I wonder which season of the 20s will break him first.
Oh, no. Which one will do it first?
Can't wait.
Okay.
Oh, beautiful. Another email, this one from JB. JB says, hey guys, this is my first email I'm sending after becoming obsessed with this podcast the past few months.
Hey JB, welcome.
First off, as a zookeeper who worked with the large variety of primates, I feel uniquely qualified to comment on the chimpanzee versus gorilla debate you guys
y'all
are
freaks. Everyone who listens to this is a freak.
I love everything that's happening here. Like, all these emails just make me so happy about life.
I love that all so many of them are primate-based.
While both species can be incredibly dangerous, and I would not recommend interacting with either without protected contact, chimpanzees in general display more aggressive behaviors than gorillas, and I feel are more likely to cause serious injury if proper precautions are not taken. I found your conversation around Jeff and his favoritism towards Kenny very interesting. I feel in future seasons it becomes much more blatant who Jeff favors, so much so that a new era contestant brought up in a post-game interview how they targeted players they perceived as Jeff's favorites slash were receiving a lot of screen time.
Yeah, I feel like Kenny wasn't too bad. I think Todd is the worst one we've seen that wasn't somebody that Jeff was trying to sleep with. Mm. Like, just from that I can think of off the top of my head.
So far.
So far, of course. that or maybe Boston Rob.
It's fair.
You know what? Actually, it's Boston Rob. It's not actually Todd second.
Have y'all considered watching the Ponderosa videos for each season? Starting with Micronesia, these were DVD extras that show each juror arriving at the villa after being voted out. Some seasons might be difficult to find, but you should check them out if you can.
That could be interesting.
We should try to find, if not some, like, we should watch a season.
Yeah.
And maybe if we're doing, like, a bonus episode in the future, we can talk about that. I don't know that we have the time to watch episodes, take notes, watch Ponderosa, and do all these other bonus things that we want.
Yeah.
But I think it's good context.
It could be fun, yeah.
Lastly, the past few months have been an incredibly difficult time for me. However, this podcast has been a huge help to my mental health, providing me something to enjoy and to look forward to each day. You guys have perfected the formula, and I look forward to being a part of this community and sending future emails. I also look forward to listening to y'all talk about Token Sheens, my favorite season.
Oh, okay.
From JB.
Well, that's really sweet, JB. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad we could help out.
I'm glad that you decided to put up with us for this long.
Yeah, I can't imagine binging my voice for that long, but hey, to each their own.
Oh, just you wait. We'll get back to that in a few emails.
Yeah, I think I know. I don't know the content, but I think I know who you're talking about. The one I have a bad feeling you're going to say, or that she's going to say, that she listened just through April. I'm fascinated.
We'll get there.
Uh-huh.
I have an update. We have hit our goal for the Chicago Fire shot.
Yes.
So we will be doing that. I don't have the alcohol on me right now, but we will be doing that
soon. TM.
Whenever we can get together again.
Yeah.
And I can get the alcohol.
As if I don't see you twice a week every week at minimum.
Yeah. So thank you, Bro My God, for donating. Your contributions went to help Chicago Coalition for the Homeless and UNICEF. So
great.
Big help to people out there. Okay. From Stephanie. Stephanie says, hi, Stephen and Jared. Please disregard some of my previous email about Mindy/Cindy from Guatemala. I think I had my seasons mixed up and gave you some bad info. Here's two that I confirm are still correct. Still catching up on past episodes, now listening to Micronesia episode 5. Still loving the content.
Thank you.
One, Jonathan Penner had a small part in Arrested Development, if either of you ever watched that show.
Really? I have seen the original Arrested Development. I've not seen the Netflix reboot.
I didn't realize they did a reboot.
Oh, years and years ago.
Oh, okay. It's in the Take Your Daughter to Work episode. So, see attached still shot. I'll show you that in a second.
Okay.
And two, Eric the ice cream scooper. He worked at Halloween-themed ice cream store.
Yeah, we learned that.
Just you wait till you get to that episode. Outside Yipsy, called
Yipsilanti. Yeah.
Well, it just says Yipsy.
Yeah, that's the shortened name of it. I thought you were struggling to read it.
No, I got it.
Okay, great.
In a teeny town called Pickney, called Screams. Also, screenshot attached. I used to live in a neighboring town and absolutely went there as a Survivor fan. Ice cream was pretty good. Appreciate you guys and all your opinions on pretty much everything. Thank you, Stephanie. And, oh, sorry. And then here are the two. There he is.
Oh, I would not have recognized him without that screenshot, to be honest.
He looks kind of like Patrick Warburton a little bit.
Yeah.
From that. Like, his head looks bigger than the rest of his body.
Well, and it wasn't jarring seeing Amanda and Parv in Into the Deep because it's on a beach. Mm-hmm. But, like, I've only seen Penner gross and disgusting having not, like, showered in 3 weeks. I haven't seen Penner cleaned up in a suit sitting at a table, you know?
That's fair. I see what you're saying. 10 more emails. Let's do it.
From crap.
I love y'all.
From Connor. Connor says, oh boy, what a season. In all, honestly, as much as it hurts me to say it, out of all 17 seasons so far, I have Bob as my lowest ranking winner.
Wow.
On a personal note, I think the money couldn't have gone to a better person, and I like how it shows how the 57-year-old man can kill it in the challenges and be a badass.
Okay.
The reason I have Bob ranked as the lowest winner so far is he had so many lucky breaks in that he goes, if falls for Kenny's lie, he goes first from the Kodo Alliance, he makes an unnecessary play in fooling Randy, which almost cost him the game. Randy to this day wishes he forced a tie and voted Sugar, but Sugar just couldn't care since she came to the show to help move her career up. And I think she saw the writing on the wall with all the Kodas being on the jury.
Yeah.
He also goes at four if Sugar doesn't let him go to fire. His final tribal, in my opinion, is the worst of all time up to this point for a winner. Granted, the other two finalists don't have anything to show for it either.
I agree his final tribal was bad. And, like, it probably cost him votes. I will say that, yes, there is luck involved. I think every Survivor winner has some luck involved, of course, because you can't control everything that's happening in the game. That just isn't how that works. But part of luck is being able to pounce on the opportunity, and I think that he manipulated Sugar, not maliciously, but just with, like, I think he knew what he was doing. I think he knew that he was playing this dad role, and he was perfectly fine doing that, and also was very careful about not making it seem like he was manipulating her while still always putting the game first. Like, little subtle things where he'd be like, and I really hope, Sugar, that's really nice. I really hope you do let me fight, like, have a chance to fight to stay on. Like, it's, yes, he does not win without those lucky breaks, and also he capitalized on those lucky breaks in ways that other winners who have kind of walked to the end didn't need to or weren't able to.
Sure. I still love Bob. I'm just standing and looking at scenarios. Any other scenario, Bob loses. If anyone but Susie wins that final immunity, Maddie goes to the end with Bob and Sugar and loses.
I think it's open question whether Maddie would have beat Bob, but yes.
My question is, do you think I'm correct in my winner ranking of him?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think where my ranking of him is correct. Maybe I have him a little bit too high, but I understand the math you took to get there, even if I don't agree with the conclusion.
I think I made my statement in the finale episode where I'm like, yeah, I think he's toward the bottom.
Yeah, and I wouldn't die on that hill. Like, there are winners that I will, like, die on the hill for, but, like, Bob's not one of
them. Jared unwilling to die on a hill?
I'll fight on any hill. I'll only die on some of them.
I feel bad because he is such a Bill Nye the Science Guy and a badass.
Yeah.
Also, do you guys think if Sugar was in a better state of mind, she could have had a better final tribal performance? I hate to use the word deserve, but in my mind, she deserved second place.
Yeah, no, I agree. She deserves second place. Absolutely. Susie did not deserve second place.
She controlled everything this season and is definitely an all-star. This may be the weakest cast for strategy so far in the 17 seasons, but boy, are they entertaining.
Yeah, for the level, like, Are some of the first, like, five seasons, like, is there worse strategy? Yes. Let's not forget, Brian was just allowed to walk to the end with no one even trying to stop him at any point.
Yeah.
But for where the game is versus where the cast is, yeah, absolutely. This is the weakest one.
On to the sunny side of Brazil, a.k.a. Token Sheens. Thank you very much. From Carl, Carl's episode 12 email. Picture the episode. It's sad crystal dunk.
Yeah. It's so good, man.
LMAO.
Them leaving that in there did her so dirty.
Shacked in a fool. Notes. From what I know, Ken hasn't even spoken to Bob since Gabon ended because he was so mad about the necklace thing.
Oh, fuck off.
Even though he didn't go home and having an immunity that tribal wouldn't have changed his game in any way. For that, and other obvious reasons, I'm not a big Ken fan, although...
it did change his game because he would have voted out Bob. Mm. Like, yeah, but like, also that's super shitty.
Although I do appreciate what he brought to the season as a character, he might have had the biggest fan base of anyone in Gabon, though, which speaks not to his popularity, but to the lack of heroes for some people to root for this season.
Well, it's funny, because like, Ken and Randy are kind of foils of each other, where it's like, Kenny, up until the point he goes home, or up until the last couple episodes, I'm like, oh yeah, I really like the guy. Like, he's growing into himself, and like, there's some interesting stuff there. And then it's like, oh, I don't really want to root for him at all. And then Randy, it's like, oh God, he's curmudgeonly and that's kind of charming, but like, he's a massive asshole. And then you learn afterwards, like, oh, actually, wait, no, there's something there. Okay.
It's one of the reasons I think this season was initially poorly received. Ken had some fans, Crystal and Sugar and Bob had some fans, but there was nothing close to a fan favorite in the general public's eye. Well, they tried because they made them vote for a fan favorite.
And it was Bob.
It was Bob. I'm pretty sure Jared is right about gorillas, actually. They're gentle giants who attack when provoked, but good to know you would also have shot Harambe, Steven. Whoa!
Steven, would you have shot Harambe?
Stop it.
Steven?
Stop it. We're not putting Steven in this position. We're not framing Steven to be the killer of Harambe.
That sent us to the darkest timeline, Steven. That's when everything started going downhill.
I'm just going to move on. Things I liked.
Just like Harambe?
Things I liked. Bob playing for all the marbles in the pot.
Very, very main of him.
All the marbles in the pot. Kenny looking like salad fingers when he runs. Oh my God. Oh, beautiful. Oh my goodness. Okay. I am going to save this one from Josh, the finale email. It is so long, and I don't think we have the time.
Okay.
So, Josh, I promise I will get to your finale email.
Thank you, Josh.
I want to get to this one because this one is from Michelle. I rolled for binge watching and critted. Hello. The last time I emailed, I was on Thailand season, and I just got to the podcast episode today where you read it in episode 5 of Gabon. So to answer your question on how hyper-focused I am, it took just under 1 month to catch up to you guys. Not sure whether I should be embarrassed or proud.
From Thailand?
That's what was said.
Okay. I'm going to do some quick math here.
Okay.
So she said it took about a month?
Yeah.
Okay. We do what? Like... We'll call it 20 episodes a season to be, no, I guess it's probably closer to like, what, 18?
It's probably like 15, 16.
Well, wait, we can just do 250 divided by 17. Okay, so it's like 15. Yeah, you're right. It's like 14.75. So that means in 1 month, she listened to, what would that be, 12 seasons? So
yes.
12 times 15 is 180 episodes.
That's a lot of episodes.
180 divided by 30. That is 6 episodes a day.
Hell yeah.
That is 6 episodes a day.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, Michelle.
I love it. Rarely do I seek out listening to the opinions of two men on purpose.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it has been truly made my watching of Survivor a much more fun experience to get to hear you guys freak out over the same things I am after finishing an episode. I never listened to an episode so fast than right after Eric gave away his immunity. We don't always agree on things, but that makes it really fun after having listened to so many episodes now. It feels like having watched the show with friends.
Well, thank you. That's really sweet, and that is the vibe we're going for. It did just occur to me, that means that you're also watching those episodes, which means that's 6 episodes of Survivor per day as well. So that means... upwards of 12 hours, really more, because we do an hour 15 to an hour and 30
Jared,
per episode.
We can't
not including
shame.
Finale and intros. That is like, are you okay?
We cannot binge shame our fans because they are here.
Yeah, that's true.
It is actively sabotaging our own interests.
No, it's impressive. That's really impressive.
I actually have seen Token Sheens because I had picked a random season to watch before I fully got into the show, so I'm excited. I still have some episodes to listen to in the coming weeks before I quickly overtake your rewatch position. Let me tell you, Jared's in for a treat with
Hell
the
yeah.
absolute unhinged personalities in that one.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. And hit me up if you're ever in Colorado. And we can talk Survivor, D&D, How I Met Your Mother, etc.
Etc. Et cetera.
Or sorry, et al.
Same thing.
And others.
And others.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Michelle. From Joshua. And this is why I'm spreading the love and I'm skipping that one email. Not because I'm picking on Josh, but we have so many new people or people who
That's
are
so cool
infrequently emailing yeah. to, for this one that I'm like, oh, we got to get to them. We have to. Post Gabon update and question. Hello. Rankings update at the bottom. New is best quotes from Survivor. I've included the two that live in my head constantly. Need help from you both and others on the best ones to include. So if you have good quotes from Survivor that you want to email in and put on this list, let me know.
Get them off is one of them for sure. Whenever anybody says get them off, I'm immediately like, God damn it.
We love getting them off. Two items for the Patreon wheel. Clarification on the one from last time. The Blood on the Clock Tower you took as your favorite board games, which I also enjoy. But I linked a video of the gameplay, which is about the length of a movie. You don't have to replace the board game prompts, but I thought you'd be interested.
Hmm.
Okay, got that. Cool. And two, when looking at a movie on IMDb, I found Jeff Probst directed a movie in 2001 called Finder's Fee, which actually has an average rating, so people have watched it. This feels Patreon/bonus episode worthy.
What's the average rating, Steven?
It does not say. Does not tell me.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and quick question for Jared from After Fans versus Favorites. This is 2 out of 2 on seasons where Jared says the person who won underperformed their original season. Amber, Jared calls irrelevant in Australia.
Yes.
And Parv, Jared thought she was an odd choice to return as she wasn't a highlight of that season.
I think you're misremembering that. Partially because I had the name Parvati is so unique that I knew, like I had heard it before. I knew she was coming back at some point. I remember listeners writing in saying that like they were surprised that she stuck out to me because she was buried in Cook Islands. Though I don't know, we've been doing this for so long, who's to say?
I was gonna say there's an active. I wouldn't put it past our fans to know what we said better.
That's
than what
true.
We
you
said.
Know what, why am I arguing?
Will this skew his future watches where he highlights underperformers that return or downgrades players that had good/great first seasons?
I don't think so. Like, Corinne sucked, and I don't think she's going to do good. Or, like, I don't... Eric went far, but didn't have the greatest game, and, like, I don't necessarily think he's going to do that well either.
Okay. I'm
trying to think of other people that are, like, underperformers. Again, Eric didn't underperform in position, but I would say in terms of, like, being in control of the game from Heroes versus Villains. Yeah, I don't know. Because you could also say that, like, Amy was an... Amy made it far, but kind of underperformed in terms of like impact on Vanuatu, at least in the end result. And she didn't have a great Micronesia either.
Okay. Well, here are the lists. Favorite season to listen to, Micronesia fans versus favorites, China, Panama, Cook Islands, Pearl Islands, All Stars, Fiji, Gabon, Amazon, Palau, Thailand, Marquesas, Guatemala, Borneo, Vanuatu, Australia, Africa. Best bonus episodes. Johnny Fairplay tells us we're wrong.
Yep.
Eric Reichenbach gives us more than one scoop. Billy Garcia.
That's such a good title, Steven. You cooked with that one.
Thank you. Billy Garcia, the metalhead with the big heart. Endurance, 1 year anniversary spectacular, Game Changer, BattleBots, Infernal Room, The Mercenary, Mr. X, Top Shot, Gone, Survivor Castaway Island, Total Drama Island, MetaQuest VR, Rumble in the Jungle, Honorable Men.
Sure.
And here are the two Survivor quotes. Somebody call the Wambulance.
That's a good one.
Terry's crying on the course from Aris. And two, it's a fucking stick from Eliza.
That is really good.
That's a good quote. I love that so much. Okay.
There has to be something with the chain, but I don't know what the quote was, you know? It's just the actions of the chain.
Here's what I'm going to do. I have two emails. Well, I have like 5 emails left.
Jesus.
3 of them are finales. 2 of them are people that we haven't heard from very much. So I'm going to do the 2 here.
Yeah.
But I promise you, Carl, Tyler, Michael, and Josh, we will get to you. We will read these emails. I swear. We've just been going for a long time here. So
that's what happens when we take this much time off.
So this one's from Katrin.
The other binge watcher.
Yes. Hi, I really did listen to the whole podcast in about 12 days.
Okay, I'm going to do some more math real quick.
It's hard to say if I'm, quote, okay, unquote. But rest assured that listening to many hours of podcasts each day is not an unusual experience for me. I work a job where I can have headphones in all day and can't listen to music in public because it is physically impossible for me not to sing or dance along. Yeah. I like you. That's a good vibe.
Did Katrin say 12 days?
Did say 12 days.
So I'm assuming we must have been listening at more than one time speed because that 250 episodes divided by 12 is 20.8, which means they'd have to be listening at 20.8 hours per day.
Well, you jumped ahead of me here. I typically listen to podcasts somewhere between 1.2 and 1.7 speed.
Okay, there we go.
Depending on the task I'm working on. Though this binge certainly saw moments where it was at double speed. When I find a podcast I really like, I hyper-focus hard until I'm caught up. I often end up regretting that when I'm caught up and miss having things to listen to, but I never seem to learn. Y'all... Oh, go ahead.
Well, hopefully you keep listening now that you're caught up, yeah. or we'll see you in 3 years when you take another month and just get through it all.
Y'all crack me up. I've really enjoyed the journey so far, and I'm really looking forward to some of the upcoming seasons. I have a lot of affection for Token Sheens because it's one of the first seasons I've ever watched and can't wait to hear what you think. Best.
My least favorite thing about Token Sheens, I can tell you right now without having seen any of it, is going to have to be spelling Token Sheens every time I have to put an episode into RSS.
And also wish me a good honeymoon.
Aw, that's so sweet. Thank you. I know I'm sort of taking the piss out of you and Michelle for binge watching, but like, or binge listening, I guess. But that's really sweet. Thank you.
And our last one that we're going to do tonight from Brittany. Brittany says, leftist survivor male podcasters. Amazing.
There are dozens of us.
Dozens. Hey, just discovered Survivor TBT during my first time watch. Survivor leftist male fans, finally. The online fandom refuses to acknowledge the socio-political aspects of a social experiment. When you get a wide variety of people, some of them will be bigots, and some of them will be sexual predators. Crazy not to acknowledge that. Drives me crazy that some people won't. Well, and then there's a spoiler for Token Sheens that I won't read out loud. So... some things from catching up on TBT episodes. Strong objections to the way you characterize my favorite, Ethan, as a weak winner. For one thing, he survived all 39 days in Africa, but also he left the game without betraying or backstabbing anyone or making enemies in Survivor. That might be the most epic social game ever. Also, he might have been the best human ever to win in terms of positive impact on the world. I do agree with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that does not factor into winner rankings.
What?
Their impact on the world after they won the game? No, it's their path to winning the game. That ranking ends after the votes are read.
Therefore, you cannot run for president and be counted against your survivor totals.
Have any of the contestants run for president, Steven?
Not president.
I do know the... I don't want to spoil our fans of David versus Goliath. I know that there is a contestant of David versus Goliath that is a politician and a very right-wing politician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And about a number of questions, some of them have real answers. Greg in season one didn't. It was just trolling. But Africa and Panama, it was a friendship test. Ethan knew Kelly had a number that was very important to her, and you can see him visibly trying to remember it.
Oh, like the random questions. Okay.
Kelly had just reamed him for not knowing her, so when he says 888, it means he tried and got to know her at least a little. Hmm. More than Kim, who opted out of even trying to remember the graduate 568 quote Kelly loves, but by showing that he, like R, selected 4 in response to Shane's question. It seems like a dumb number to pick between 1 and a million, but 4 is the number of his son's jersey and therefore Shane's favorite number.
Oh...
Aris was close enough to him to know that. Unfortunately, Shane was so angry it didn't matter. But Aris didn't lose a vote randomly, and Aris didn't win one.
Hmm. Yeah.
Also, very cool fact, after Palau, Ethan called up Jared's favorite squishy human and mind, Ian Rosenberger, to say that he liked Ian's game. Ian went with Ethan to Africa for a charity run, and that's how he got into international humanitarian work.
Cool.
If you listen to his Talking with T-Bird interview, Ian has great thoughts on the importance of not being a white savior. That's honestly good. Very good.
Yeah, I like Ethan the Human. I just don't think he played the greatest Survivor game, and I don't think he'd win any season post-Africa, but I'm glad that he was in Africa, and I'm glad he won.
Jared, how close do you think Survivor can come to not being a zero-sum game? Thought to keep that in mind as you go into Token Sheens.
I mean, it wasn't a zero-sum game for Sugar. Like, she made the game about Bob at some point. I guess the closest to becoming to not a zero-sum game on the financial level is being in the GOAT position, knowing you're in the GOAT position, and trying to get somebody else to win to take you along so that you get $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's second place prize. Outside of that, I mean, I guess it comes down to more like personal relationships and how you think it can help your life after Survivor. But all of that is so unknowable to us on the other side of the camera that I just kind of have to view it as a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
Because mostly it is. Like, there is only one winner at the end. I guess there are phases where, like, the tribal phase is not zero-sum. Like, you want to win those challenges. Actually, the one of the things I know from a future season is the first boot of, I think it's 47, because he's a very popular podcaster I listen to, political podcaster. And he mentioned that, like, you know, if his tribe had won immunity, like, he was not going to go home. And
well, yeah, if his tribe won immunity, well, of sure, course sure, he
but,
wouldn't have
but
gone
like,
home.
It would, like, he talks about, thankfully, the one other season I've seen, David versus Goliath, or one of the other seasons I've seen, that if they had gone to tribal first, the tribe that does, then somebody who made it all the way to the final probably would have gone home. And he's like, I'm not saying I would have gone all the way to the final, but like, things can shake up that quickly. So like, yes, obviously, like, that part of the game is not zero sum. Your tribe doing well will do better things for you, and your alliance doing well, even post-merge, will do things for you. But eventually, and I think knowing when it turns into a zero-sum game is super important. Of like, when is it time for me to look out for me versus to look out for my alliance or my tribe or whatever it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. That's where we're going to end it. Both because we've been talking for a long time, and two, my jaw feels like it's locking up with how much I've just been like...
Yeah, you've been reading.
Just been going. Ooh.
But thank you guys for all the emails, especially our new listeners and our long-time ones too. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's two different things, but both equally important. And thank you.
Yeah, I love you all. Like, thank you for doing that. It's still cool to me that we're not just speaking out to a void. There are actual people on the other end listening to this.
I know, some at 1.7 times speed.
Yeah, so I gotta talk really fast so that when we go at 2.0 speed, then that means they're not gonna be able to understand what I'm saying right now.
I'm already a fast talker. How are you listening to me at 2.0 times speed?
Super focus.
Oh, that's right. I kick us out at this episode because it's mine. For my co-host Steven, this is Jared.
And for my host Jared, this is Steven.
Bye-bye. See you in Brazil.
Woo!